I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Cuba, a country that has had a long and tangled relationship and history with the United States. We are going to talk about what Cuba is like now, where that country has been, and where it may go. My guest today recently visited Cuba as part of a humanitarian effort. They are Indianapolis-based attorney Greg Silver and Dr. Gary Fish. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about impressions of Cuba. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guest today recently came back from a trip to Cuba on a humanitarian mission. They are with me in the studio is local attorney Greg Silver. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Buenas tardes.
It's good to have you here. And joining me by phone is Dr. Gary Fish, who also was on the trip. Dr. Fish, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. Nice to be on.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. Well, Greg, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell me a little bit about the sort of genesis of this trip? What prompted the two of you to go down there?
The Jewish Welfare Federation of Indianapolis and Winnie Goldblatt in particular had organized a trip to take medicines to the pharmacies that are in the synagogues that are remaining in throughout Cuba, which are dispense ordinary medicines, which many do not have there, to the entire community of Havana and other places. So it was our effort to our feelings to take medicines and clothing to those who were in need, whether they were Jewish or not.
How many of you, Dr. Fish, how many of you went down there?
Well, I think there were about 30 of us.
And how long were you down there?
It was for a little over a week.
So, and tell me a little bit about how the trip worked, how you got there. I know Greg was telling me off air, and I'll let you tell the story, that it was a somewhat inauspicious beginning, that there was some drama even at the start.
At the Miami airport, we were going to board our unmarked plane, which is a daily flight to Havana, and there was an accident inside the Miami airport, and we had to back up through the airport, got stuck under one of the viaducts, and so it was a good backup into history, I suppose. It was a prelude to entering what I would call the Twilight Zone.
What made it the Twilight Zone?
I think because you fly over the Keys and fly for 40 minutes to Havana over into an area that you never really have, you never were in before, although you might have been around it when you were in the Yucatan or the Key West or the Cayman Islands, but it was sitting there in the middle of like an area that no one really goes to except Canadians and Europeans. So it was a strange feeling to see it prop up out of the, to see the fields and the Cuba arrive in your, in out the window.
Well, we'll drill down a little bit more than this, but I'm going to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Dr. Fish. What was it like? I mean, for most Americans, going to Cuba really isn't an experience that we get to have. And, you know, a lot of what we think about the country is in some ways now shrouded in myth. Could you give me some of your impressions of what you saw when you were there?
Yeah, it was excuse me, it was incredible because it's the people are wonderful. The people are nice. The people could be living next door to you, okay? But the ground rules were so different. First of all, everyone makes 83 cents a day. And it doesn't matter who you are or what your occupation, everyone makes 83 cents a day. It translates to $25 a month. Now, the education is free, and we saw groups of school children, and they all were dressed very nicely and had uniforms. The education's free. The health care's free. And the ability to go to graduate schools to become an accountant or doctor or lawyer is based on proficiency testing. So they've got that system in place. But you wake up in the morning and you're going to make 84 cents for the day. And if you're the typical Cuban just trying to put myself in their mind, what are you going to do? And so there are some other options that were fascinating. One of them is the black market is very active there. And so if you have something in your job that you can sell to the black market, that can happen. An example I was told was someone in construction, for instance, reports paint spillage. And so then they turn around and sell the paint to the black market. And the government is aware that this is happening, but they aren't active in prosecuting people because they realize they can't make a living on what they're getting, the 84 cents a day. You have a backup of a green card that'll allow you to get food, and the allocations came out to 2 pounds of chicken, 5 pounds of rice, and 1 bar of soap per person. So per week. Another alternative for earning more money is to get into tourism, because that's tips. Tips were a great way to make extra money. So you have accountants driving taxi cabs, and you have doctors waiting tables. I remember at one of our dinners, the waiter, his wife was a cancer doctor, but he was making money to support the family by being a waiter. So
it's almost like the system is inverted from what we do.
It is. Upside down. Even those that get money from their relatives in Miami or wherever, then they don't have anything to spend it on. So we saw a lot of, Gary and I saw a lot of people sitting around on the streets that looked pretty well to do, you know, and we said to our guide, who was a guide but a proficient attorney, and I said, why are they sitting there? Well, they don't have anything to spend their money on that they get from their Miami relatives. Well, since we left in late April, I noticed that Raul is now allowing them to, if they have some money, to get the internet, which could revolutionize some of their thinking, but so now they can spend their money on the expensive internet. But also we were told that it took 4 hours to go from one side of Havana to the other in a bus.
Yeah, there's an important point that Greg's making here. Mm-hmm. As far as the other thing is that's tremendously different, and it's so great to be in America, is the access to information, because there is a total shutdown of information for the Cubans. They have 6 channels, and 3 of them are government-run, and the other 3 are government-run for education. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, there's no access to information. For instance, in our hotel up on the 5th floor, we had CNN and we had BBC. But the Cubans are not allowed to go above the 1st floor in a hotel, so they don't have access to that. And I was told the story of someone coming into Cuba who had their Time magazine confiscated by a guard, who then promptly sat down and started reading it himself. And when we were there was some problem at Guantanamo Bay, and we didn't know about it, and no one else did, our tour guide or anyone. So and a flash drive, I think, will get you into more trouble than anything else there.
It's a little bit like, you know, to some degree, there was a theory, obviously, that with the fall of the Iron Curtain, that the fax machine had as much to do with that as advanced weaponry, because it's the flow of information that cracks things down.
But I believe that the Cubans know what's going on, and they have cell phones that they can use to call the United States, mm-hmm. talk to their relatives, but we could not use cell phones to call the United States. It was blacked out for our frequencies. So if we wanted to call and to the United States or Canada, or anywhere, they would just say, "Here, use our phone. It's okay. We can use it. It's free, and or whatever it is. And you know, we know you can't call out otherwise." So it's just a contradictory situation. Also, one more thing about the television: sometimes it was on, sometimes it was waving lines like the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there were baseball games from the Yankees for, I guess, Fidel. Sometimes there was NBA basketball in English. And one of the most amazing things was the weather channel in English from the United States. Mm-hmm. And that was at the hotels.
Yeah.
National Hotel.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. When I was a child, back in the day, late 50s, early 60s, in Chicago, I had a great aunt and uncle who were kind of adventuresome, and they would tell us these stories about going to Miami and literally getting on a boat and sailing over to Havana from Miami back in those late 50s, early 60s. Of course, today we call that a cruise ship or whatnot, but I guess it was, you know, almost kind of like public fare back and forth by shipping by boats for passengers. And I know gambling was in Havana, et cetera. What is, how is it now for us as Americans to travel, kind of like we would go to Nassau or go to Los Angeles or go to Montego Bay? How is it to go to Havana as a tourist? And would you recommend that, or should we spend our money otherwise with some other venture as opposed to that kind of travel? And I'll take your answer on the radio. I'll just disconnect now. Thanks so
great.
Much for being here for us.
Thanks very much.
Should I go ahead on
yeah,
that?
Greg, since you're the lawyer, it probably would make sense in the legality.
Just observations. The ferry slips are empty. They're there. They were there were plenty of ferry boats and travel from Miami and Key West directly to Havana that could happen in the future. It's there. You have to go in on a visa. We had a visa. We're not advocating anything other than that. There are people that are going in from Canada and other places not having their passport stamped. We did not do that. So is it amazing place? The beaches are beautiful. There's a lot of wildlife there. There's a lot of preserves. There are a lot of people from Canada and Europe that are going there. That are vacationing there for $500 a week, all expenses paid, 3 meals a day on the most beautiful beaches with starfish and crocodile reserves nearby, and you know it's and looks out on the Cayman Islands. There are it's a very beautiful place now, and there's no gambling anymore, and the prostitution is minimized. The Batistas have been overthrown. There's a loosening up though of encouragement for tourists to come because of the hard dollars. And yes, there's plenty of places to dance like the Tropicana, and there's plenty of private restaurants. So it is, it's a land of contradictions right now.
And in terms of those contradictions, I mean, is it, very friendly and all of that. I guess where I would go, Dr. Fisher.
Let me tell you a very interesting story.
Sure.
Let me tell you a story, because we were talking about you got 84 cents a day, and you can either work the black market or you can get into tourism. The third idea is to leave. And what's the story with that? Well, the government has statistics that show if you're over the age of 60 and you leave on a visa, you'll come back. But if you're under the age of 60 and you leave, you won't come back. We had a waiter who spoke perfect English, and so asking him, well, how did that happen? Well, he was trained to be an accountant, and you can get into graduate schools, but the government decides what they want this year to be trained. So if they want lawyers, you become a lawyer. If they want attorneys, you become an attorney. Anyway, so he became an accountant. And that was fine, but then he realized that wasn't going to help with his 84 cents a day. And so he took tapes, English tapes, and took them home at night and learned to speak perfect English off of these tapes. And at the university, they were shocked, why aren't you speaking with an accent? Okay, so then he wants to visit Florida and to get a visa. But you have to be 30 days in a row, you know, vacation. And where he works won't let him have the 30 days. They keep making him take his vacations. So then he had a relationship with a relative, and he tried to use that as a means of leaving, and the government wanted to see proof that there was a real relationship by emails and by money, and he couldn't show that. So then a parent became an American citizen, and so he tried to apply through that, but his application is kind of hanging up there. So everywhere you'd see to go and visit, it isn't like the Caribbean where it's what meal are we going to have and what beach are we going to be at. This is a real study in a totally radically disorienting political system. Mm-hmm. And how do normal people who want to get ahead in life, how do they cope with this? And that's what was, to me, just so fascinating.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. My guests are Greg Silver and Gary Fish. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about impressions of Cuba today. Both of my guests, Greg Silver and Dr. Gary Fish, recently returned from Cuba where they were on a humanitarian mission. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Henry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Sure. I left Cuba 45 years ago, and I returned to Cuba with St. Peter's United Church of Christ about 5 years ago. And one of your callers mentioned local television channels, and what I noticed that was that because it's a socialist economy, there's no commercialism, so there is no advertising on television. The billboard, there are, you know, when you drive around, walk around, there are no billboard ads for beer commercials or for Coca-Cola, et cetera. So there was a tremendous absence of advertising that we here almost take for granted. And it was actually quite refreshing, but obviously if you know that it's stifling economic growth, that's, you know, that's the problem there.
Just while I've got you on the line here, how old were you when you left Cuba?
I left when I was 6 years old.
6 years old, so you don't have many memories of it then.
Just the neighborhood and the family, et cetera.
What was it like going back after all that time?
Well, it was quite emotional to return to a country where, you know, one grew up. My mother gave me addresses and places to go to where she worked, and it was quite emotional, you know, not just crossing into the Twilight Zone, as your guest mentioned, but also landing there. And I always felt like when John Paul II touched down in many different countries, he would kiss the ground. That's how I felt like doing myself, too, back home.
Well, thank you very much for the call and the conversation. Well, Greg, we were talking a bit about the premise of this. Obviously, the start of the trip was so that you could go check in on and help the Jewish population in Cuba. How many people are we talking about there, and what's the dynamic?
From the time that Castro, prior to Castro's taking over, there were approximately 15,000 Jewish citizens of Cuba. Some stayed, most left when the confiscation of property occurred after the revolution. So there's only about 1,200 to 1,500 left. Many, a few young people here and there. We were in Cienfuegos and Trinidad, et cetera. It appears that the government, Raul Castro, is allowing the younger people to go to Israel if they wish for whatever reason. He's allowing younger Jews to leave, which obviously means there won't be any Jews left in Cuba at a certain point. And, of course, the ones that are leaving, while they're educated, and they don't have any work. So it was depressing. But at the same time, the community the Jewish community is helping out the non-Jewish community with pharmacies that are open to all, and food that's open, donated food that's coming in from, and money that's coming in from the Jewish and non-Jewish community. For example, Steven Spielberg has been funding one of the temples with a lot of money for food. They don't have enough food for, so Friday night dinners is what we were also contributing to. And I'm certain that that has an effect on the entire community because there's a butcher that's available. And so Castro has been pretty good to the Jews. There wasn't any animosity, even though Lansky was thrown out as a Jewish thug.
How many people, how many other Americans did you see while you were over there?
Gary might comment on this. I saw mostly Canadians, Europeans. There were a few Americans under the wheel. There are a lot of American tours under the radar. For example, the LA Dodgers retirees were playing exhibition games. National Geographic was walking around. There are various universities there that were doing these humanitarian tours, and Indiana University is going there in October. We don't hear about that in our media, but there are a lot of Americans under the wire. The Canadians are doing the food and importing the food for them that they're not getting anymore from Russia. And I suppose that and they're getting the jobs to do the reconstruction in Havana Viejo, the old area.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dr. Fish, you mentioned earlier that the health care there is free. What is the quality of the health care? I mean, how does that system work? I would think that would be kind of fascinating given the intense debate we're having about health care in this country.
Yeah, it is. And I was surprised, you know, reading that the average Cuban lifespan is about what it is in the U.S., which is 77 years. And the way I put it together is this. You're there. Nobody has any money. They don't have crime. There's nothing to steal if everybody's getting 84 cents a day. Okay, so how do you live that long? Well, the thing is, they don't have the obesity. They don't have the overweight. Nobody was overweight, okay? How does that tie in? Well, diabetes is a disease that triples the rate at which the arteries clog up with cholesterol, and all the pharmaceutical companies, they like to use diabetics to show their drugs work because they get faster responses because they just have more rampant coronary disease and all these problems. And it is a totally weight-related disease. You lose weight, you get rid of your diabetes. If you can get back to ideal weight, most of the time, type 2 diabetes is the majority. So in this island, people don't have weight-dependent diabetes. And then you've got drugs that are inexpensive, that have side effects, but are inexpensive for controlling hypertension. So if you get rid of diabetes and you control hypertension, then, that's a big impact on the health. But trying to put together the different stories about, they have health care, they don't have health care. They have a desire for entrepreneurial projects, and so it's conceivable they could have an area that has very nice medical equipment to be used by tourists, foreigners, and the few people that have money, whereas it's hard to imagine that the public in general are going to get exposed to a much medical care when they just don't have any money. But what I found interesting, political philosophy there is really refreshing because I thought before I went, well, there's basically an anti-American attitude in Cuba that probably prevails, and it really isn't that at all. I don't think they're anti-American. They're very caught up still with their liberation and self-determination they have by the overthrow of Batista. And all of those billboards that were being mentioned before, they all have the same thing on them, the face of Che Guevara. Everywhere you go, it's Che Guevara. And when we went to the area that honored him, where he's buried, and the stores sell, little cigar holders with Che Guevara. And didn't see anything about Castro. There aren't billboards of Castro. There's no domination of his political philosophy there, and the people feel like they've been liberated by Che Guevara. They have self-determination, and as far as the U.S., they see it as an opportunity for growth by bringing in Cuba. I think really wants the foreign dollars coming in and tourism. They don't want the ideas and the flash drives, but so it's It was a friendly environment.
But I would think that's a going to be a difficult line for them to walk, because a lot of the dollars do come accompanied by the flash drives and the ideas.
And there's a problem, and that is the more you give them, the more they get. And naturally people want more. They want more amenities. They want more of everything and more freedom. So it's like, you know, the story that I read recently about this big fishbowl that's got two fishes in it, and Cuban people keep looking at those fish, and they're getting older, and one's Raul and one's Fidel. And the question is, what's going to happen when those fish pass away? Mm-hmm. And that is the big question now. And, you know, you can throw in the issues of Guantanamo anywhere you want, but the bottom line is the Cuban people do not dislike our president, do not dislike our country. They're caught in the middle right now, and I'm not sure where they're going, and if the Castro's fall, what does that mean to their society that's based on 18 cents, whatever?
Well, or whether they fall, eventually they will die.
Well,
another thing is the embargo. As we were told by our tour guide, the Cubans don't think that the embargo is any problem. I mean, it's not the cause of their problems, the U.S. embargo, because they're free to trade with every other country in the world. So mm-hmm. any economic problems they have is not because of the U.S. And so many of the Cubans, thousands of Cubans are being, like Greg said, are being helped out financially by Cubans, their families that are in Florida, and it's been relaxed so they can visit every few months. And it's just very, very sad, because we'd see again and again people at the airport leaving, crying, and in the elevators, in the hotels. And it was the same story. They'd come to spend time with their family. They'd bring some money. They'd bring some help. And the government doesn't care about that, as long as it's not, as I was told, something flagrant like 40 pair of pants in the suitcase.
Everybody brings suitcases, yeah. Suitcases. And these planes are unmarked. They're charter airlines, you know, but they're daily flights from Miami. And it's like any other normal flight, except, like I said, we're going to a strange place. And yet, I remember at the airport in Havana, which no one harassed us or anything. I mean, there was a plane that came in that said American Airlines. And I said, where did that come from? Oh, that came from Toronto. It comes in every day.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Greg, I'm going to ask Dr. Fish this too, but given that in both cases, I'm presuming this was your first visit to Cuba?
Yes.
Dr. Fish, was it your first? What was the thing that surprised you the most? Because Cuba obviously is as I said earlier, has had a long and kind of tangled history with the United States. It's something that figures in our history books. So we have a sense of it without really knowing the country.
Beautiful homes up on the hills where apparently Fidel and others live, an American embassy, which we call an intersection that has 400 people working at it, a beautiful residence of the so-called American intersection up on those hills. Looks like something from Southern California. I think those were impressions. No military presence except at the tomb of Che Guevara. And then if you went outside, you could, for $5, you could stand next to, as Gary and I did, stand next to one of the 1950 shiny cars for $5. Everything was $5. A kiss from in the square from one of the ladies, a drawing. Everything was $5. So as Gary would tell you, they are the best capitalist communists right now.
Well, and clearly they don't have a real complicated banking system. No, they don't want to be exchanging currency.
Well, that's extremely interesting, too. Yeah. Gary, go ahead. Maybe on the dot. Yeah. Explain that.
Well, the things that surprised me, it was the way, just the difference in coping. For instance, we'd go to restaurants, the state-owned restaurant. It was usually the same meal each time. You had fish or chicken, and you had rice. But it wasn't actually, it may have been what was raised, but in Cuba, a farmer, it's against the law to slaughter an animal. Everything they raise is exported, and then things are imported. And so, and the government control, you can't speak in a public place any anti-government sentiment or you go to prison. The control, like we would go to restaurants, there'd be, every restaurant would have a band, which is more than the U.S. You couldn't support that here, but these bands were playing for tips. And then I noticed that they were seen to be playing the same songs in every restaurant. It's like government control. So you have
the government controls the set list.
Guantanamera. Yeah, we heard that a thousand times.
Total government control. People trying to better their lives. And how do they do it? It's so different. You know, we get up here in the U.S., all you have to do is put on Google and type in the top line anything you want to know about anything, and you have it. We have the freedom to go anywhere we want to try to better ourselves any way we can. And these people are very, very restricted by the government held down. But they still have an optimistic attitude. They think there's going to be liberalization and more opportunity, and their positive outlook. It was just such a wonderful place to visit, to see such different ideas and clash. And I'm not into politics, but it was a real political awakening. And by the way, we kind of had a joke on the way out was, hey, next time I hear somebody telling me how tough they have it here, say, hey, you think you've got a problem, go live in Cuba and see how you'd feel.
We have gotten, we've gotten a question that's on that point from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, who says, is the flow of money from Cuban Americans in Florida to relatives in Cuba preventing a revolution in Cuba? If the money flow stops, wouldn't that in turn be beneficial for the freedom of the Cubans? Greg, I'll throw that one to you first. It's a tough question. Thank you very much for sharing it, though, to the listener who did.
I'm not sure I can answer that. I don't have a crystal ball on that one. There are three different types of currencies right now. One that the basic people have, it's called a peso. One that the tourists have to have, also called the Cubano. And then there are American dollars, which some are in between, although I didn't see much American dollars changing hands anywhere. So, you know, the question of causing people to I think this is enhancing their ability to at least have some amenities in life and perhaps be able to educate their kids. I don't know the answer to that question. Gary, I really that
oh, I
Gary,
think,
your thoughts.
I
don't want to cut off the money like that.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing what we saw in the U.S. and thinking of it as an antagonistic situation where one group is trying to, you know, dominate another politically by economic. You know, what would that be like, embargoing, even a tighter embargo?
Or blackmail or something?
The most valuable thing we had on the trip was toilet paper. I'd carry it around because you'd go to a public place and there wouldn't be toilet paper. And you kind of understand maybe there'd be a person there that would make sure if you asked them they would give you some. But they were probably taking the toilet paper and selling it on the black market. You got a 84 cents a day in a green card. I mean, the best thing that we could do, I think, would be to a friendly attitude and to bring in businesses and bring in currency by establishing businesses that are a win for them because they're providing the geographic area and a win for whoever's investing in it. And we, like, for instance, we did go to a hotel that was a beautiful hotel. It was a foreign investment, and if they had more of that, then and I think the best way to bring about change is by people being able to better their living status so that they aren't just scraping for.
And John, I cannot understand why they can't export their cigars to us. Not that it's such a big deal, or their rum, or the Bacardi rum. And there's an interesting story about Bacardi, and that is that Bacardis, which are now out of Cuba, saved Castro's life at one point when he was about ready to be executed by Batista. I mean, there's an issues that there's things that could be done. Perhaps the president, after something happens in Florida in the next election, might go down there as a goodwill, you know, trip with some baseball players. I mean, there's things that could be done to maybe open up some trade and contact, which I'm sure that these people know. The Cubans are already aware of what's going on to a certain extent. And now with the internet accessible, they're talking to their relatives on the phone.
How interested are they in the life in the United States? I mean, are they? When I travel in other parts of the world,
they're fascinated with it. They like to watch the old movies. The government, they see these movies from the 40s and 50s and tell you about the actors. There's not a hostility about the U.S. There's more of a fascination.
There's monuments to Lincoln. that are in the Museum of the Revolution that are to Lincoln and what he did to free the slaves. The history of Cuba is of diversity, and there's a lot of people that they all admire the United States. There isn't very few hardcore of any, you know, pure communists anymore. There's a change going on in Cuba, and it's gradual.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. My guests are Attorney Greg Silver and Dr. Gary Fish. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Cuba. My guests are Indianapolis attorney Greg Silver and Dr. Gary Fish, both of whom have recently returned from a humanitarian mission to Cuba, not mission trip more than anything. I think a mission is something the government sends you on, and you are on your own. I'd like to ask just a little bit, you know, I asked what surprised you. What was the most fun thing you did there? I mean, so far we've talked about duty to some degree and, you know, talked about the experience that you had in analytical terms. What did you find that, you know, is the thing that would most bring a smile to your face? Dr. Fish, I'll start with you and then go to Greg.
Two different kinds of fun. We went to the Tropicana, which was fun because we'd heard about it a lot, which the Cubans aren't allowed to go to. That was fun. But what I like to do was I'd find these things that didn't make sense, economic niches and things, and then talk with the tour guide and then talk with our tour guide and just trying to put them together to make everything kind of make sense because everything was so different. It was just so intellectually exciting to be there in that kind of environment. That's
and Greg,
we went to the Finca of Hemingway, magnificent piece of history in itself, with his books, some of which are subject to the dampness. His boat there. The graves of his four beloved.
I'm hoping they kept the first editions.
My wife doesn't think so. I don't know. The burial of the four dogs that he loved and his, he had big game that he shot, but he also monitored birds out of the tropics. He was an environmentalist in the kind of context of Teddy Roosevelt, which I was so impressed with all the botanical plants and birds at that site in Miramar.
We are talking about Cuba. Today on No Limits, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Johan, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Certainly. I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
I was very captivated by the conversation. I was recently in Venezuela, and visiting my family. And I could notice some of the what you guys said about the toilet paper not being in restaurants and things like that. Like, that's happening there now. And there's actually a lot of Cuban people that are coming there in partnerships with the government of Venezuela. And they work in these modules where you can go get medical treatments done for free. And these people, they're just so happy to be out of Cuba and working and in another country. And they save so much of the little money that they get because they get paid a minimum wage there that will be very low for a doctor, for a Venezuelan doctor per se. And they use a lot of that money to buy candy and take it to their families back because they don't have that much of that stuff there, chocolate and things like that. So,
yes, to answer the, what's going on there. As we were told, the whole communist idea floated because of Russian support. And when Russia, when that went away in the early 90s, the Cubans came up with alternatives. And they educated doctors and they send the doctors out to other countries in exchange for like oil, special pricing and things like that. And so I think that's what you're seeing happening there. If that doctor were in Cuba, he'd be making, I'm telling you, 84 cents a day and he'd be driving a cab. And so he's quite happy to be out. And now I don't know how much of the money he makes in that in Venezuela he gets to keep and how much the government takes, but the Cuban government. But that's part of it. They're exporting as trained individuals as their, you know, product.
And I must say they're very well trained. She was a great doctor, a dentist, and I talked to another woman too who was actually like an actual medicine doctor, and very well trained. They're very well trained, and I mean, they're great people, all Cubans.
Oh, very smart. Our tour guide was a judge until she realized, you know, it wasn't going to work out. Now she's a tour guide, and she makes in tips what she would take years to earn. But they're very bright, and they're very proud of their educational system, and it is free. And the children and the schools, it looked like they were really, you know, straight up with that.
Thank you very much for the call, Johan.
Maybe a comment on that. Certainly, at the top of the economic pyramid in Cuba are the bellhops, the taxi cab drivers, the assistants at the hotel, the Nacional, and the other hotels. And at the bottom of the economic ladder are the lawyers, doctors, architects, engineers. And that's a upside-down society. So the ones that are allowed, the doctors that go abroad, I would assume they have a hold on them because otherwise they'll never come back. In other words, they must leave their families and they must know that they can't come back if they don't return the money, you know, that they're making there. I mean, there's got to be some quid pro quo and they'll never come back.
Did you get a sense of, I mean, what we're talking about here is really a kind of, for lack of a better term, hidden hand economy, where you say you operate on one set of principles, but then, you know, it sounds like there are wholesale violations of those principles. That's got to create some social dissonance, I would think.
There's a wonderful slogan. I know we were told the first day by our tour guide that what this amounts to is that the people pretend to work and the government pretends to pay.
That's right.
That's the favorite slogan mm-hmm. in the amongst mm-hmm. the Cubans there.
Yeah, it's a pretend society right now. I don't know how long that can last.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a couple of comments. I've also traveled to Cuba, visited many of the places that your panelists have visited. I have two comments, and I'll take the response offline. It's well known that the Cuban jails are full of political prisoners, freedom of speech, assembly, free media, and free and fair elections do not exist. It's a one-party state. Comment on that, and whether or not your conversations with any of the Cuban people dealt with that. And then last, one thing I think that illuminates the dysfunction and of the Cuban state is that one thing I learned, Cuba has no domestic poultry industry. They consume a lot of chicken. And they import all their chicken. I thought that perhaps it was because they didn't raise sufficient feed to support a domestic poultry production, but it's because all livestock in Cuba is owned by the state and it's illegal to slaughter. And I'll listen to your comments offline.
Great. Thanks very much for the call, Doug. Well
that was a real rosy
assessment.
I think that there is great numbers of spies. We probably were among them all. I don't know whether our guide was a spy. I can't tell you whether there's any freedom of thought that's not monitored. You know, I mean, we can't judge that. We were only there 10 days. I'm certain there are all these dissidents that are jailed. And if you speak out, you know, you're in trouble. So, yes, that's why we're so lucky to be Americans. Okay.
Do people even talk, though, about politics there?
Not much, unless you... Well, there was a very interesting conversation, and Gary, you could come into this. There was a monument to the Rosenbergs for having died for they did with the atomic bomb and the exposure of the secrets. And the guide was telling us how great that was, that they were martyrs. And we reminded them that they were... convicted of espionage, and that in fact there were a number of trials in that regard, and it wasn't that they were just such great martyrs because they were paid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, there was give and take to a certain extent, but much caution, and we didn't push because we didn't want to, you know, make sure that we hurt anyone's, you know, tourist opportunities. But I don't know much about the chicken thing. I'm certain that we didn't see very much domestic produce. We saw tobacco. We saw mangoes. We saw much sugar refineries that were in ruins. So I'm sure that the moderator gave an analysis that everything's imported.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, two thoughts come to mind with that. One is, the secret police, and we were told right from the start that you really can't talk in public carefully. You have to be very careful because you don't know who's reporting to the government, and anybody could. And so, it's totally repressed that way. And interestingly, the degree of repression carried over to the art. We went to a museum that had some very nice works, and they said that the artists were told at one point, you have to paint just realistic. We don't want interpretive paintings because of the political potential. And one of their principal artists who was in the contest, I think they won the contest, but the government was very unhappy with them because it was a picture of a woman lying in the summer on some grass, and it said, all you need is love. And so that hooked up with the Beatles, and the artist was in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Gary, I'd like to see that. I didn't see that picture, Gary. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that Beatles were outcasts for many years, and there's now a monument to John Lennon that we saw.
Well, it's a John Lennon, him like sitting on a park bench, and this was the way the government told the Cubans it's okay, you know, we forgive the Beatles and things like that. So, but you know, the very idea that they could be, you know, influencing ideas at that level just reminds us of what we have in the United States. It's so tremendous.
Well, sometimes we have censorship, but not like that.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I've been enjoying listening to your program. My question is Cuba's evolution economically away from communism. China has dramatically evolved a capitalist system, while the Communist Party still has, control. And I'm kind of curious why Cuba isn't looking to China as a model of change.
That's a good question.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike.
Yeah, they are in a way because they've now allowed people to start restaurants in their homes. And the idea of private business is new, and we're told, the tour guide said, they're going to have taxes, they're going to be taxed on the profits. The thing is just starting to ramp up, but it's probably, hopefully it'll be going in that direction because that's what's going to bring in additional monies for the people.
And just there is private property now allowed in Cuba, so things are definitely changing to a certain extent, and for what it's worth, there's Chinese television on in English.
We have also gotten a comment from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Says that this person visited Cuba with the first humanitarian effort in 1999. Says Cuban Americans sending funds to family in Cuba does make a difference. Without it, people will go hungry and lose resources because government will not help.
Well, we saw empty. You have a ration card, mm-hmm. $40 a month or whatever it is, and we went into those so-called groceries and they were empty. So, yes, that's why we brought medicines and clothing, and that's why others are doing the same. It's a humanitarian thing from our point of view.
And furthermore, it's shocking. The buildings of downtown Havana, the buildings everywhere are concrete. I mean, they're gray concrete. There are no windows in the windows. There are often no doors. It's like a bombed-out area, and they would be perhaps one block that was really restored and painted and things. So it's a shock to see, to be in the major city and see a bunch of gray buildings with no windows.
And yet there's a lot of beautiful historic buildings, too.
We've also gotten a comment via Facebook from a listener who's criticizing the program, says they're probably selling the toilet paper. OMG. Your guests are making me increasingly upset. Please consider bringing in a Cuban exile, child of a Cuban exile, or someone with some cultural sensitivity. Next time, please. These men are being as nice as they can be, and no harm is intended, but I can have this conversation in the lobby of the next symphony performance.
Well, when
I'm
you
so
see
sorry.
Some... Yeah,
There was no offense intended. No, no, not at all. But if you had 84 cents a day... And you had the example I mentioned before was the person in construction who had paint and would report spillage and then sell the paint. I certainly did not mean to disrespect the Cuban people at all.
And I don't want to give the impression that where we went that they didn't have toilet paper or cleanliness. That is not. Don't want that impression to be pervasive here. From what we saw, there was plenty of health related issues.
We are talking about Cuba here on No Limits. Rob, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. My grandfather was actually born in Cuba, and during the whole Elion fiasco, I was actually down in Miami for it. And I wanted to know what sort of influence he had in modern-day culture in Cuba. I know a couple of years ago they announced that he was attending the Cuban Communist University.
Thanks very much for the call, Rob. We'll see if either of the guests has an answer. Is he still a presence in some ways? Do people talk about it?
No, I didn't. I can't say that I have that information. Dr. Fish, I don't know. I don't know about that. I can tell you that recently there was a kidnapping and a custody case where an individual was taken to Cuba and Cuba returned the child. And I think there's a better dialogue going on now between the two countries. And we're not trying to whitewash anything. We know there were spies. We know that there could be something better for Cubans. And it's not. It's more than money. It's a quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Rev, welcome to the program.
Thank you. When Fidel took over Cuba, those who could, with brains, imagination, and initiative, left to flee to the United States. The problem is that, let's say this country, the United States, falls under a similar socialist mania. Where do Americans flee to? After he took power, there was some resistance from his request to acquire all the guns, to have people turn in their guns. Mm-hmm. And he gave his famous Para K speech. Mm-hmm. For what, comrades? Why don't you trust? You don't trust your government that has liberated you, and so on. And so the guns went. So my question is there any value? Do your speakers see any value to those who are supporting the Second Amendment in this country? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Rev. Greg, I'll let you take that one.
Oh, thank you very much. thank you very much. It seems to me that we have wonderful things in this country, wonderful amenities, wonderful opportunities, and sometimes we disagree with the government, but we can advocate that opposition anytime we want and continue to do that. And that's something they cannot do in Cuba or North Korea or whatever. And if Canada has something that we could use as an example, or Australia, then we should continue to advocate that, those who wish to. And that's what democracy is all about.
We are just about out of time here, so I'm going to ask real quickly. If you had the chance, would you go back? Dr. Fish, real quickly.
Sure. But I think, you know, I think I got the drift as to what's going on there by being there. And so I don't know.
About 5 seconds.
I probably wouldn't, although I would certainly want to help to those who are in need there, as I would anywhere in this country as well.
You've been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.